looking forward to it. I've
Yeah.
been. I don't
Me
have to look forward
too.
anymore because now we're
No,
here.
it's about to happen, like right now.
We're just living in the present because it is a gift.
A holiday gift.
A holiday gift.
And in the present, we shall start this podcast. Okay. Hello, makers. Welcome to Making Conversation, a podcast where we chat all about making the app and the act. I'm Jen, head of marketing for Making. My pronouns are she, her, and my Making app username is Knit Pearl. We're headed into the holiday season, and as a multi-craftual app, making food, cooking, and baking is a part of making. And we're just very lucky to know an actual chef who really knows her stuff and wants to share it with you, because coming into this holiday season, everyone is going to be busy. For those that are having holiday gatherings and maybe want to bring together some people around some food, we've got a chef to help you make sure that all of that is as stress-free as possible. Andrea, welcome back to Making Conversation. Because you've been here once before. We actually had such a fun time the last time that we hung out.
We did. It was... I just wanted to come back again. I thought I need this once a quarter at least.
I love this. I think we should do this once a quarter. What's spring food trends? Spring food trends with Andrea. That will be our next one. Okay. So yeah, as I mentioned, you know, making is multi-craftual. We have baking and cooking as options for the Making app. We have plenty of people who post their makes food wise in the app. When we first started talking about recording this, it was like cooking and gathering with people that you love, whether it's for the holidays or not, it should not be a stressful thing. It should be a joyous thing. It should be a time of like just being stoked to be around friends and family. We have a couple, we have a couple. You have many tips from being a chef to prep and just kind of make this the best time that it can be. Do you want to give a little intro to yourself and what you do?
Sure.
And then we can hop right in.
Yes, I'd love to.
Awesome.
My name is Andrea Nightingale. My pronouns are she, her, and I live in California in South Lake Tahoe. I have a personal chef business here going on 6 years. Started it in Napa, California, where I'd been living. I worked in restaurants, everything from kind of the greasy spoon diner all the way up to Michelin star over many, many years. I've worked with some amazing chefs who have taught me a lot as well. I'm just going to give a shout out to Ellie Phelps on that one because she's a chef in Napa who's like the hostess with the mostess and really has taught me a lot. I've spent a lot of time cooking dinner parties over the years and acquiring a lot of knowledge about all of these details that normal people don't really think about because, you know, why would they? And it does add up to information that can really help people when they're hosting a party, hosting a dinner party or a holiday gathering. And so I just really want to share this because it's just like in my brain, and I see my friends and family hosting parties, hosting dinner events, and feeling very frustrated and stressed out. And I think that we've all been there. And so my holiday gift to you all is that I'm hoping that I can share some information, some kind of tricks of the trade that will help you at home.
We love this gift. You're like a beautiful Santa chef.
Thank you.
We'll see if that makes it into the final cut. Okay. Andrea basically like gave a whole list of things that she wanted to talk about. And I was trying to think of from a perspective of somebody who is not a chef. Very much not. How would I want to digest this? Ah, digest. So we kind of broke it into different parts. We have the foundation, prep, the vibe, and
Q&A.
Q&A. I got there.
You did. The anticipation only builds.
Exactly.
I mean, everyone was on this. I messed that up. The pause builds the anticipation.
Yes. Well, I didn't catch that. So you're good. All right.
Perfect.
So let's start with the foundation. You're like, I would like to throw a party for my friends, a holiday party. Where do you start? What is that foundation?
Okay. This is where having a little notebook or something. I have like 1,000 notebooks that I use, that each one has its own subject matter and
purpose. Grab a notebook, everyone.
Yeah. If you use like notes on your phone, whatever device you use, that's easy for you to kind of keep a list, because the key is organization. That's the key to like kicking stress out the door. The location is the first part. And within the location, there are questions that you have to answer, like, how, you know, where are people going to sit? Are people sitting? Is it going to be a standing affair? Is it like a buffet? Is it like seated family style? So depending on how many people you have coming, that can help you answer some of those questions. But it's important to have an understanding of that, the guest count, the location, the kind of resources available, like your oven. Do you have 2 ovens? Do you have 1 oven? Do you have no oven? Can you cook a big turkey if you only have a mini oven, you know, or a toaster oven?
Will the turkey fit in the oven?
Yeah. Will the turkey fit in the oven? Or will the turkey take up the whole oven and then you won't be able to cook anything else like pies or, you know, stuffing or whatever? So just sort of taking an inventory of where you're at is the first part, because that's going to dictate everything else that you do, rather than going the other way around saying, I want to cook this, do this, all that. And then you're like back looking at your space and you're trying to figure out how to make that all fit together. That's a stress trigger point right there.
Yeah. And remember, the goal is no stress. Very, very little, a healthy amount of stress to push you forward.
Inventory of dietary restrictions is very helpful, particularly as someone who cooks for a living. I'm always very conscientious of what people can and can't eat, whether it's a preference or an allergy or whatever. It doesn't really matter. They want to eat or need to eat certain foods. So it's important to accommodate that with your menu. And it can be very easy because of the World Wide Web. There are so many recipes just really at our fingertips. It can be easy to create a menu that everyone can eat.
I also think, to that point, as somebody who is vegetarian and my partner is celiac, that's probably down the line when you're like planning your step-by-step process of like what you're going to make, because a vegetarian, you know, if they find out later that like you scooped the potatoes and then went and like put that in the gravy, it's like, oh, well, there goes 23 years of vegetarianism down the drain.
There goes that. Yeah. That's a very good point. And also ascertaining, you know, like if it's celiacs versus just a preference to not eat gluten because of cross-contamination. Nobody wants to send anyone to the hospital or make them feel sick. That's like the worst thing that we could do to our friends and family.
It's not a nice holiday gift.
Yeah. It's not a good gift. It's not a cute look.
No.
So that really brings us to the next point, which is your menu. When I sent you, Jen, my email, this was like a page long for the info on the menu. So I've tried to really condense it down. But, you know, as we've talked about, it's informed by your location, basically your available resources, your seating, your oven space, your cook space, your guest count. And most importantly, if you're the one who's doing all the cooking, it's informed by your own confidence level and your own, you know, what you feel like excited to cook.
Yeah.
I would say you yourself are going to be more happy. Your guests are going to enjoy anything that you make if you make something that you feel comfortable with. Food magazines have these beautiful images and they are styled people. I mean, I've worked on these photo shoots before and, you know, every little thing is kind of perfection. And that is not reality. Even in every chef I know, even in restaurants, like there are things that come through and it's not this like most beautiful, perfect little thing. The point of gathering is to be together, to connect with each other, to enjoy each other. So the food is really the food is just a conduit for that to happen, you know, and we should enjoy it, of course, but the purpose is gathering and being together. Mm-hmm. So if you're choosing recipes that are really stressing you out, that you feel really uncomfortable with, that you think have to be like this certain way or look this certain way, just kick that to the curb and say, you know what, I'm just going to make something that I know I can do, that I feel good about, so that I'll be in a good mood and I can enjoy the people who are here. Mm-hmm. That's why we're here.
For example, for me, that's like, I'm going to go to the co-op and buy lots of fun, fancy cheese and yummy Ooh. Crackers and get some good wine and, like, you know, yeah, like also booze-free cocktails for those of people that don't drink. And that's my go-to. Because I know that, like, if I were to try and cook or even just, like, set up fancy, like, I would be way too stressed. You don't need to Martha Stewart the shit out of your dinner or your party. Mm-hmm. But if that's what you enjoy doing and you're good at it, go for it.
That's really the key and the theme of everything that I'll be sharing with you today is that people come to your home because they like you. And they want to spend time with you. And I'm saying this as someone who has struggled over many years before even like going to culinary school or working in restaurants. I would host holiday parties at our house. And, you know, it was like, oh, we've got to go to Fred Meyer and get like all these matching linens and these holiday themed things and set the table. And I've always enjoyed doing a lot of those kinds of things. And it was a little bit of a challenge, you know, to try to cook recipes that were a little bit outside of my comfort zone. It was something that I enjoyed, but I mm-hmm. never let anyone help me. I was always like, I got it. I'll do it all. And then, you know, ultimately you're kind of by yourself in the kitchen and everyone else is out there having a good time. And you're like, well, that's stupid.
Yeah.
You know, so over the years, and this is another really big point, which is asking for help and not just asking for help, but expecting it. Put people to work, you know, give them tasks, let people join in. And that personally has been a struggle for me over the years. And, you know, I still am not great at it, but I definitely like let people in more. You don't need to shoulder everything yourself as a host.
How do you pick what else you want to offer?
I have this thing I call anatomy of a meal. I think it could be kind of controversial because people have very firm opinions about holiday tables and what should be on them or what shouldn't be on them. And do you embellish or modify a family recipe or do you just always stick to it? I mean, I'm of the opinion that if there's something that's a family recipe but nobody really eats it, modify it. Make it delicious for today, for our taste. Play around with it and try to find a new way to do that if you're going to try to you know, figuring out which kind of traditional recipes or family recipes you want to include. When I say traditional, I mean family.
I have two sets of potatoes that we've always had every holiday gathering. And I think that they came from like my grandma and maybe before her. You know what I mean? But when it's only like me and my partner, a whole flat of potatoes isn't necessarily the way to go because then it's like, sure, leftovers are great, but that's a lot of food. So it's, you know, even changing that type of thing.
The only dish that absolutely has to be on my holiday table every year, no matter what, is mashed potatoes. I mean, for me, that's, and that could be it. If only it was mashed potatoes, I mean, I'd be happy as a clam.
I know. So happy. Well, that's one of the recipes. It's like mashed potatoes with cream cheese and sour cream. And even when I was vegan for 3 years, we used vegan cream cheese and vegan sour cream, and it was still absolutely delicious.
Nice too, because there's this like nice acidity that lifts it up to something that would otherwise can be like really heavy. That actually brings me into my anatomy of a meal. This is something I would recommend. And I started kind of switching up the family traditional one a couple of years ago, and it was so enjoyable. It kind of changed my life. My husband Eric and I were living in Atlanta with his family for a year, and so I flew back to California over Thanksgiving so that I could spend it with my parents. And it was, you know, Central California. It's like beautiful weather. We were sitting outside eating olives, and it was just the three of us. And so we decided to do something, you know, really simple. My dad and I drove to Berkeley to this really great fish store called the Monterey Fish Market. We got fresh Dungeness crab, and they had these beautiful sardines that were there. And that's what we probably maybe got something else, but I had this idea to do like this kind of seafood, like feasting, grazing kind of meal. And that's basically all we did. We started in the afternoon with just like snacks, olives, cheese. And then I, at one point, like grilled the sardines and grilled this like fresh bread. And we had that with olive oil and a bunch of herbs. And then we had a salad, and then we made crab cakes. And then, you know, and we had like wine, and it just sort of like flowed over several hours. And there was never any intense rush. There was never this like, okay, got to get it all done and up at the same time. And we all felt so light afterwards. We weren't like laden down with tons of food. And I just thought, wow, I didn't realize you could do this for the holiday. I thought, you know, you kind of always do these same things and have these, you know, family traditions. So that really shifted a lot for me, because it was so enjoyable and so relaxed. And everybody got plenty to eat. Nobody, you know, we all enjoyed the food. But the most important piece was that we were able to enjoy each other. Mm-hmm. And to me, that has made it one of the most memorable holidays. So going back to these turkey, ham, potatoes, stuffing, green beans, blah, blah, you know, all these things. Usually there's like meat components in all of them. And when you look at like the actual meal, it's very heavily weighted in like a couple of categories, like the umami category, the starch kind of bread category. And for me, I think of these categories in terms of flavor profile, but also texture. Mm-hmm. Because for a complete meal, for me, I want acidity, like this brightness. I want something that's got like umami and like it's really savory. I want something creamy. I want something crunchy. I want something like colorful. Everything has to be colorful. I want it to be really bright. I want there to be like a sauce. And I want there, for me, I like to have bread or something like that you can dip in and like scoop stuff up with. And then at the end, I like something kind of sweet, but also balanced with acidity. And so for me, that like the what that looks like is like a salad, but one that people actually want to eat. mashed potatoes, some kind of like umami main kind of thing, which could be like your turkey, or it could be like a roasted pumpkin that's stuffed with like a mushroom risotto that could be vegan, which is delicious. I like to have vegetables always. And if it's a lot of people, like, you know, 8+, then I would have like a couple of different vegetable sides. But if you're just a small group, then I might only do one. And that might be something like Brussels sprouts. I like them just blistered, so there's still like a little bit of crunch, but they have this really nice depth of flavor from the iron skillet that you cook it in really hot. And then I like to cut Castelvetrano or Frescatano olives and mix that in with preserved lemon, and then like a ton of herbs like mint and parsley. And it's just like really refreshing, and then like drizzle a bunch of olive oil over that, and then having something sweet. So I guess that's like pies. I love fruit, but and also chocolate.
Yeah. I'm getting hungrier as we go.
I know. Sorry. So you can plug in your family recipes into this, you know, anatomy, if you will. Like if you always have mashed potatoes, boom, there's your potato starch dish. If you always have like cranberry sauce, you know, one thing I love to do, because cranberry sauce sometimes doesn't really sit on the plate. I'm like, why are you here? You're like the one thing with acidity, and I don't get you. So I've started making it into like a jam like a chutney, and I put it on the cheese board in snacks because then it's really delicious. We've talked about anatomy of a meal, so that you're like forming your menu now. You're like, okay, I'm going to have this salad for that, these potatoes, whatever. And then the other thing you want to consider is the cost. You know, what's your budget? And is this something that you're paying for, or are you doing this as a potluck? Is it a lot of people that you're cooking for? Maybe a potluck is a great, you know, a better way to address different dietary concerns and also cost.
I like that, because then also it's kind of a celebration of like, maybe it's everybody bring like your favorite thing. Yeah. And well, maybe not that, because maybe everyone likes turkey and then you end up with like 12 turkeys and that feels overwhelming. But
but you as the host can be sort of the conductor of this orchestration. So you say, okay, we need something vegetable side. We need a salad side. We need a potato dish. You're guiding it into something that ultimately is going to make sense on the table that people are going to really enjoy. Mm-hmm. So you've got your menu, and then the next thing that, and Jen, you really kind of mentioned this with your cheese plate, but having snacks.
Snacks.
It's like you have to. Have to.
You do. You do.
Like,
especially if you're inviting me to your party. Same. Please have snacks. Here. Yeah. I love snacks. Probably more than the actual meal itself. The snacks are the most important.
You've got to have snacks. And like the best reason. There are two best reasons to have snacks, which doesn't make either one a best. But first of all, your guests won't be hungry. They'll have something to do. And second of all, snacks buy you time, like so much time. If you're the one who's doing the cooking, or you've got a couple of you cooking, or even potlucking, dinner always takes longer than you think. And snacks will allow people to kind of get out of your hair, and they won't be like, "Well, when is dinner going to be ready?" And you're like, "Go eat some cheese."
Yeah. The other thing that's important
is beverages.
Yeah.
So, as I drink my tea,
beverages. Speaking Wait, let's do it at the same time. Ready?
Okay, ready.
One, two, three. Beverages. We did it. Okay.
I love it. Yeah. We're so good. Alcoholic, non-alcoholic mix of like the combo of those. And water. Water is very important for people to stay hydrated. So if, let's say you're going to have 12 people over and you've got enough room, but you're not in like a mansion, so you don't have tons of room. Now you're trying to figure out, where am I going to put the beverage? We're going to address this later. But basically, think, I'm going to have like a little area for beverages so people can help themselves, serve themselves. I'm going to have another spot for the snacks, and I'm going to have those in two different zones. So that way people aren't all huddled in one spot, and it creates this flow.
There's a movement. I feel like that would maybe be an obvious thing, but that to me was just like, oh, that's why everyone always hangs out in your kitchen and every party, Jen, because that's where the beverages are.
And, and the snacks. And where you are too, probably. But
that's true.
So it's nice to have
the flow.
The flow in that space a little bit.
One of my favorite things to do with beverages, especially I feel like more and more people are either deciding not to drink alcohol, or they're exploring possibly like drinking less, or if somebody's like a designated driver. You can find cocktail recipes online that are delicious with and without alcohol. People can mix a few things together and it's like super fun, but they don't have to add booze unless they want to. And then it's like you're not buying the non-alcoholic stuff and then the alcoholic stuff. It's like you can still do all of it. That's just that's a Jen Joyce tip for planning your gathering without spending more money than you need.
I love it. I totally agree with that, because why would you do twice as much work or get twice as many things when you can, you know, cross-utilize? And my sister-in-law has always done this, Lindsay, and she's like an amazing hostess. But she's always had a signature cocktail for every party, which I just think is so fun. But you can do a signature mocktail kind of mix, like you're saying, and then people could add, you know, what alcohol to it if they want or not, and it would be delicious either way. And then everyone gets to also share and enjoy the same kind of flavors. It's not like an isolating, like, well, we're all having this special thing, but here's some, you know, water for you.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Be mindful of your guests who are choosing not to drink, and also make sure to make it fun for them too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I do like my wine though. So
same.
Andrea is going to go over a little recap of part one.
The foundation, which is just setting the place, getting our bearings, knowing what we have and what we're working with. We've got our location, our guest count, including dietary restrictions. We figured out our menu, which recipes we're going to use. We've got a note to have snacks for when our guests arrive. And then we also want to make sure we have beverages.
In two different locations, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, but also water.
Water.
Very important, regardless of alcohol or non-alcohol.
You put like fruit in it. If you have a dispenser, make it fancy. Mm-hmm. Throw some cranberries in there and an orange slice. Okay. It's so festive.
And then the anatomy of the meal.
Just the sort of basic thinking about your components of the entire meal that are going to be on the table to hit all of your different flavor, taste points, and textural points. So you have something that's acidic and fresh. You have something creamy, an umami bomb. You've got a veg and then something potato or starch. You have a sauce, probably for your umami bomb. You've got bread if you want it, or something to like scoop up or sop up any of the sauce or things on your plate. And then you have like something that's sweet, but also balanced with acidity. So it's not just sugar, but it's sugar balanced.
So let's move on to part two, which is the prep.
The prep. Okay. And I always say, get your mise on, because Jen is laughing. It's a very common thing to say in restaurants, actually. Like, I'm going to get my mise on. You know, you don't say it like that, but it's your mise en place, which is all of your prep. But it's also a state of mind. And sometimes we'll call it a mental mise. And it's just like, I am getting organized. I'm putting it down in a way that is makes sense to me. So I know exactly what I'm working with, what I need to do, when I need to do it by, and how I'm going to do it. So
mise en state of mind. That was supposed to be a New York.
I love it.
That was not my best singing.
But it was so beautiful all the
same. Well, thank you. I just want everyone to know, like, I'm not a professional, but I definitely could have done better. Okay.
This is like, if you like writing lists or checklists, this is like one of your favorite parts, because this is lists. If lists aren't your thing, whatever it is that you do to track what you need to do and then cross it off, this is the area where you do that in this process. Mm-hmm. I have three different kind of lists. They've got your shopping list, your timeline and prep list, and then your equipment checklist. The shopping list is pretty obvious. It's, what do I need to buy? But I have seen a lot of shopping lists that are it's just one list. Going into a grocery store during the holidays is my personal nightmare. It is a shit show. I don't know if I can say that, but that's what it is. We all know it. We all know it's true. Yeah. I mean, no one enjoys that. No one is like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to the grocery store. Thanksgiving.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. Now I'm just going to sing the whole time. Can you tell I've been prepping for two events that making is a part of within the next 3 weeks?
Yeah. All of our words must be sung now.
Yeah.
This is how we're processing.
You should just see how I live my daily life.
The long shopping list. Oh, yes. The shopping list.
It's not how to do it, folks. It's not how to do it. I mean, you can, but there's a better way.
Don't do that.
What should we do?
I'm going to tell you. Organize it by the category. Think about how your grocery store or your market is laid out. Where do you go for things? I do mine produce, protein, dairy, dry, and then household items. If you have a lot of people coming over to your house, just pick up an extra thing of toilet paper. You know, it's like
smart.
Not something you'd like necessarily think of all the time, but you really don't want to run out. And the other piece of this, I have an iPhone and I use the reminders. And I share this list with Eric because he and I both do shopping for the house. And every time either one of us goes to the store, we just look at the shopping list and then we pick up whatever we need. And for the holidays especially, I cannot tell you how life-saving that is. Because if you are someone who shares shopping with multiple people, just share a shopping list. You don't have to have all these papers that you're like crossing off and adding stuff to. It's just right there. It's digital and it makes it so easy. So you've got your produce, your protein, your dairy, and your dry. And so I always also will put in how much of those things I need. So let's say I need two bunches of celery. I'll do celery x2, heavy cream. I'll do x2 PT, which is 2 pints. So that way, if it's not you going, whoever else is there knows exactly how much they're supposed to get. So they don't have to get there, or you don't have to get there. And you're like, shoot, how much of that thing do I need again? And then you're like going back, looking for your recipe. Yeah. And then, oh my God. And
that's
then
that's a really good point. It's like, again, going back to the prep, when you're creating your list, having your recipes in front of you. Way back in the day, when I was like just fresh out of the house and like wanting to, you know, do the traditional potatoes that my mom used to make all the time, I went to the store and I was like, okay, I have the ingredients, but I don't know how much. And we had cell phones, but it was before fancy things and X-tune reminders and all this stuff. Make sure you have your recipes in front of you and so you can mark down how much you need. If you don't have enough, then there's more stress.
This is like how I do it for my job, which is throwing a dinner party, basically.
Yeah.
So I have my, this is my like work journal over here. I've got my checklist on this side. I've got like what each kind of item is. And then underneath it, I write what the ingredients are. So it's like green salad. And then underneath it, it's apple, pine nuts, mimolette, lemon vinaigrette. And so I know that those are all the components that I need for that. And while I'm writing this out, I'm also doing my shopping list at the same time. Because then I'm going through the menu and I'm like, okay, this is what I'm going to make. These are the components for that. And then I write down exactly what I need in my shopping list and then it's done. And as soon as you figure out your menu, you can do this. So you can do this a month in advance. You could do this a couple weeks in advance.
Mm-hmm.
If you start doing this shared reminders shopping list with other people in your household, you could just create a separate one that's just for dinner parties or special events. So that way you're not buying stuff in advance before you need it if, you know, you're going. And then I just put recipes on the other side. So it's like I write the recipe there and then I know what my thing is there and it's all in one place.
Great.
And then you have a record of it too. If you're someone who entertains a lot or you cook a lot, then it's like, you're like, wait, what was that thing I did that time? Or what was that dinner that we made? That's awesome. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, so I know we're about to go on to timeline and prep list. Part of the timeline that I actually have a question about, because I feel like, especially if you're doing a big holiday gathering and you're cooking lots of food, or even if you're just putting out a lot of cheese and crackers.
Yeah.
Which is me. And you don't want a bunch of stuff in your fridge for too long. Yeah. But you also don't want to be going on the day of or whatever it is. When do you suggest people go shopping?
I love this question.
Thank you.
When you're looking at your prep list, you're looking at your menu, you're thinking, what can I do ahead of time and how much ahead can I do that? And so as a general rule, I would say anything that can be frozen, assuming you have freezer space for it, things like pie crusts or rolls or
Are the dogs playing in the background?
Yeah, they are.
I love it.
They're like,
I was like, I think they're playing.
Like, is there an earthquake?
That's so cute. We love it. We love animals here, so that is fine. They're adorable.
This one, they look like ferocious beasts. So think about your freezer space. mm-hmm. you know, can I do things ahead of time? I always make, like, I make a lot of fresh pasta, and I'll do like ravioli and I'll just freeze like big batches of that. So if that's something that's going to be on your dinner table, you can definitely do that months in advance and just like have it, assuming you have the space.
I mean, that could be part of your shopping prep list too, yeah. right? If you're planning really far out and you can, maybe it's like every time that you go to the grocery store over the next month, mm-hmm. you pick up X, Y, Z because you know it'll be fine for a month and you don't have yeah. to worry about it. And then like as you get closer,
yeah.
then that way it's not like everything all at once in your fridge and you're just like, where's the coffee?
Or Right. That's exactly.
I can't find my bubbly water. Yeah.
That's exactly it. And again, this has to work into your schedule. So if you're working full time during the day and you have kids or, you know, responsibilities at night, it might not be practical for you to like prep 2 days out and then 1 day out and then the day of. You might only have like 1 day the day before.
We organize our list. We purchased our items. Now, yeah. what is next?
So part of your timeline and your prep list are... I like to just get a calendar. I'll say, okay, let me look through my menu. What can I do in advance? And what day do I have available to do those things are? I know I keep like going back to salad dressing. It's just, that's a very simple, I'm going to make the vinaigrette. You know, let's say my dinner party is on Saturday and I'm like 2 weeks out trying to plan this. And I'm like, okay, well, I can just do that on Monday night. It'll take me 15 minutes. I'm just going to do that. Maybe I'll make a double batch or a big batch of it and we'll have that for our dinner that night too. So nice. That kind of yeah. like consolidates some of those things, which you can certainly do. So you're just going to kind of write out what can I do? When am I going to do those things? You don't have to make everything from scratch either. I'm a crazy person. I do, but you don't have to. There's nothing wrong with not making things from scratch. So if you don't have time to prep an entire menu from scratch, then don't do it. Who cares? Mm-mm. There's so many great products available out there that you can just buy stuff that's already made and gosh, what a time saver. And that's going to just you get to check that off your list already.
I love that.
Yeah. So you can scale. This is one thing that I can, if you're doing a lot of baking, and let's say you're going to do all your baking, let's say the day before is like the day that you have to prep and you've got to prep everything. And that includes doing all of your baking. And let's say you're making a couple of different things. You can scale out those dry ingredients a week or 2 weeks in advance and just like measure out. I'm going to need my 2 cups of flour. I'm going to need my, you know, baking soda, blah, 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 whatever, sugar, you know. Kind of put it all together in a container. And then when you're ready to do the baking, you just are like, boop, 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 throw it all in, mix it up, and then bake it. And so it-
You can pretend like you're on a cooking show.
Yeah, exactly. So you I can really-
I've got 2 tablespoons of baking powder. All of a sudden I'm-
Julia Child.
Julia Child. That's. I was almost at Martha Stewart and I was like, that's not right.
You wish it's. No, just kidding.
Them certain words.
I know. I don't know why. I don't have anything against her.
We love you, Martha.
Yeah. Martha, you're okay. Fine.
Yeah.
But kind of on that note, when you are looking at your recipe, I always like to write it down as I showed you. And I do a shorthand for it because a lot of recipes are not written in the steps that you need to do them in. So like for baking, for example, it's almost always that you're going to cream your butter and your eggs and your sugar together as the first step. So a lot of times in recipes, they kind of divide those steps up and you're like, well, that's dumb, you know, because now I could just shorthand it where I'm like butter, sugar, eggs, and then I do a little plus sign next to it where I'll just like put an arrow and say cream. So I'm going to cream all those things together. So it gives me my ingredients and then what I'm doing with them. Nice. And then I have like a plus sign and now I'm going to add between brackets, you know, 2 cups of flour, this baking powder, this whatever, spices, you know, boom, you know. And so if you understand what recipe you're going to cook before the day when you're sitting there going to cook it, it's going to go a lot faster also and a lot easier because you already like have your mind wrapped around what it is that you're doing rather than like reading it and then like, oh, I need like this, I need that, I need to go cut it, I need to do this. You know, that just adds time. And I think it adds stress as well because you've got a lot of other stuff going on. So any little things like shortcuts that you can give yourself ahead of time to give yourself a head start when it's time to actually do the cooking, just do those. And that all comes in that like prep.
Yeah.
The mental needs.
Yay.
And then the last thing is your equipment check. When you're, and this kind of goes back to your choosing your recipes for your menu. You know, make sure you have the equipment to cook the thing.
Make sure,
like, you know, like make sure you've got like a mixer if you need a mixer, or you under you, or you know what like you could use as a substitute, or you know, just different things like that. And then this is probably one of the most important things. Get your knives sharpened like a couple weeks out. Get those babies sharp. You are more likely to have an injury and cut yourself with a dull knife than you are with a sharp knife, which sounds crazy.
That
it sounds like that's not right, but it is, because
that's opposite. But no, that makes sense. With it, it's less of a struggle. It's
exactly.
Just a,
you're just, you go through and always keep your fingers curled under.
Yeah. Don't get your fingers
so
in there.
So you cut like this. Pretend this knife is a, this pen is a knife. You just cut like that. You might be able to find online something you could link that demonstrates knife skills.
Cool. Oh, that's great. So if people are listening and they're like, curl your fingers, what?
I know. Use a pen.
Rub
it up.
Something. Yeah.
I don't get that.
Yeah. Okay. So part two prep.
Part two prep. Overview. Get your shopping list. Do your shopping list. Once you have your menu, write your shopping list, your prep list, and your timeline all together while you're looking at the recipes. So you have the quantities. Use, organize your shopping list by produce, protein, dairy, dry ingredients, and household items or other. And
don't forget the toilet paper.
And don't forget the toilet paper. it's always important. And if you're sharing shopping duties with other people in your household, use, like reminders, like the reminders app on iPhone or something similar. I don't know what the other options are. I apologize.
This is actually really great because the notes app, you can actually create like bullet points that you can physically like tap check to off. Check off, and you can share that with other people. And when they edit it, it changes
Perfect.
It. So that's what I do. We actually use that for when we do events for making or anything that like we all need to see. And then it's right on our phone and it's super easy. So that's what I would suggest.
I love that. Too. Yeah, that makes it super easy.
If you have an iPhone. If you have an Android, I'm not sure and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
If you use an Android and you have an idea, put it in the comments below or send us a note and we'll share it.
Part three, the vibe. Let's get creative.
Let's get the
good
vibes.
Good
we
vibes.
We gotta get the vibes going. I'm gonna put some like fun vibey music right here. Ready? Let's do a little dance.
Okay. Now I'm singing it. As this is Making Co. All of you people out there, I'm sure, are insanely talented, wonderful, creative people who love to make
they
things
all are. They
and
all are.
They I know it's true. And this is the area where we satiated our left brain with all of the grids and the lists, and now our right brain gets to play and have fun. This is the area where you get to really be creative, and this is all about where it all comes together. Just to hit the bullet points for it, and then I'll talk about it. You've got your service style, your table settings. That's like the big, one of the big like areas to really play. You've got like a theme. You can come up with a theme. Lighting, music, party favor if you're going to do that. For the service style, when you were doing your menu, you probably would have decided already if you're going to do this as a buffet or family style, or if you're, you know, if this isn't a holiday gathering, if this is something more formal, maybe you're going to do like a coursed and plated dinner. So you just, honestly, your location and the guest count are probably going to determine how this is going to go. Usually mm-hmm. for a holiday table, having a buffet is very easy and, you know, can accommodate a lot of people. You just pick yeah. one spot in your kitchen or wherever. And this is something you can decorate, put florals there, you know, have your platters. You could put linens down and then all your dishes just go there. You can do little menu cards so you can write what each dish is going to be. You could do a full menu that you right. I love menus. I do menus for my dinners all the time. Mm-hmm. I use Canva sometimes these days, but you can just see it's just kind of like a simple one. But I have others where I like draw on them and do like calligraphy and all of that. So it's a fun, if that's your jam, if you're into that.
Get artsy. That's
exactly
fun.
That's an area to do that. If you're all going to be sitting at the same table, and you're doing it family style where your platters will be on the table with you, just keep that in mind when you're doing your table setting. So if you're mm-hmm. doing florals or candles or things like that, make sure you leave room for the platters. So that way, you know, they have a space to be on the table with you.
Yeah.
So one thing, I guess I have it somewhere else, but because I mentioned buffet, I'm just going to talk about flow here. Mm-hmm. Really fast. And the flow is the movement of the room, the way that people move through your space when they're eating. So we mentioned with snacks and beverages, there should be a flow. You want to create stations within your space. So the snacks mm-hmm. will be in one spot, the beverages in another spot, if you can, you know, you work with with the space you have. So if that doesn't makes sense to do that, then obviously do what makes sense. But mm-hmm. that really helps break up the gathering spot so people aren't just all huddled in one place or another. And think about this when you're doing your buffet. This is something I just really wanted to talk about because I've seen this with a couple of different home gatherings and I just think it could really help people. So you've got your, let's say you've got an island or a table in your kitchen and this is where you're going to do your set up your buffet. What do people need for that? They'll probably need a plate because they're not going to put everything on their hand. They may or may not.
Unless that's your theme.
Right. Unless that's your theme. Eat with your hand. Or you're Adam Sandler in The Wedding Singer and she gives pays with meatballs. I like to think about, is everybody going to sit at a single table? Mm-hmm. If so, are you going to preset that table with silverware, glassware, place settings? Or if you're doing like a buffet, are people going to grab their own plates, silverware, and napkins and just kind of sit wherever? Mm-hmm. So these are just questions to ask yourself when you're trying to like work through this and figure it out. The one thing that I would say that's really important when you're talking about flow of your buffet line is create the starting place where you can think, okay, there's going to probably be a little line waiting. Where is that going to be out of the way? And mm-hmm. when people exit the buffet, you want it to be kind of like an easy flow for them then to get over to their tables. So they're not crossing over each other mm-hmm. or you don't have like people standing and waiting right next to like where someone is going to be sitting, unless that's kind of the only option.
Yeah.
So like look at your space and try to figure that out. And this is one thing that drives me crazy. Always put the utensils. If people are going to get utensils, put it at the end of the buffet line, not at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to grab a plate and your fork and your knife and then you're like trying to hold all that and then you're trying to scoop stuff onto your plate and go down. Don't make it harder for people. Make it easier. Yeah. Slotted spoons are useless. I hate them. On a buffet line, they drip everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So don't use a slotted spoon unless that's like really all you've got. You know,
try to use... slotted spoon is going to come for us.
Oh, I get crazy. They drive me crazy because then they make this huge mess and they're dripping everywhere.
So yeah, it's not. So not a good look.
Actually walk through it and in your head think, okay, like I've got my plate. Now, you know, you want to give people a utensil to serve themselves with that requires just the one hand, which means tongs or like a spoon or maybe a spatula. Something that's very easy. So they should never have to put their plate down to grab something. So like those salad things, you know, where you've got like the giant fork and spoon thing. Don't use those. Use a tong. Use something that they can use with one hand.
One hand. Nice. Okay.
I really went into detail there, but it's like something
But it's good to think about that stuff because you want people to kind of get through at a good clip too. And if people are having to set stuff down to load their plate, it's gonna slow it down. Mm-hmm. And at this point, remember everyone's hangry, so gotta move as fast as we can.
That's right. And if you're gonna be serving somewhere that's like you know, on an island and you usually have chairs or bar stools there, just take all those bar stools away wherever people are going to be serving food. You don't want anything dripping and falling on your upholstery. But for two, it's just an impediment in between the person and the food that it doesn't need to be there. So set those against the wall or in the garage or whatever. But yeah, create a nice clear space for people to move through.
Nice.
So that's kind of like my big thing about the buffet. Table settings can be so fun. I love setting the table. I always have. I found like books on napkin folds that I would get really excited about. I think there's something so magical about sitting down to a really beautiful table. And when I say that, I mean a table that somebody thought about and really cared for and created. So you do not have to go out and buy anything. You don't have to buy like new linens or whatever. I would say use what you have. If you have a lot of people coming and, you know, it's just more practical to use like recyclable plates or something, then do a fun thing on that. Maybe make paper flowers and have like paper napkins and paper plates and, you know, kind of make it seem like, oh yeah, that was totally on purpose because it's so fun. I wanted to do a paper theme. There are a lot of great table runners you can get that are just parchment, like butcher block paper.
Oh, yeah.
Or not butcher block paper, just butcher paper. And you can remember like restaurants when you were a kid and you could just like color on it. Just throw some crayons down on the table and let people have fun.
I like that.
Just get creative. I think.
Yeah. I mean, none of you are going to have trouble with that.
Yeah. You guys. No. I know. I'm just like, gosh, with all the like crocheters out there, I bet they're like some really gorgeous table runners and I mean, quilted place settings. And I'm like excited to see on the making app, like all the beautiful things that you all make. Cause I know that.
Yes. Okay. So here's my call to action for you watching and listening. obviously if you're listening, there's no comment section. But you go to our YouTube or go into the making app, post your like holiday, like, I don't know, gathering photos. Like we want to see what you're cooking, what you're baking. Yeah. We want to see your table. Even if you like are like, it's not that impressive. I want to see it because I think that it could give somebody else an idea. There's so many things like you just said with crochet and quilting and, you know, all of that that you could. Even things that are passed down through your family, like heirlooms and all of that. We want to see that too. Anything
so
crafty and creative that you do around party planning. And it doesn't have to be just specifically to holiday because I think that with how many creative minds listen and watch this podcast and are in the making app, you know, you could inspire somebody else. So share.
Share.
If you're not in the making app, go to themakingapp.com, download, and join the community. Okay.
I love it. I'm so excited. I can't wait to see what everyone does.
There's so many great secondhand options at whatever your favorite secondhand shop is. And again, getting creative with that kind of stuff too. None of my like snack bowls and cheese plates and all of that. None of them match. It's stuff that I've collected, and they all have like, they're all like either interesting or, you know, they're like the perfect size for the cheese that I love, you know, that kind of thing. So it's like, don't feel like you have to go out and buy a bunch of new stuff or make a bunch of stuff. You can also get creative with secondhand stuff at your favorite, you know, secondhand store, thrift store.
Yeah. I love that. There are so many like beautiful gems and they're so inspiring. Sometimes you come across one piece and you think, oh my gosh, I want to set my whole table up like around this and kind of let this guide my theme. It's so beautiful. It just, especially for a dinner party, I'm with you. I prefer actually that like more antique, kind of something older, not quite as new for the table. It feels, especially when you have like candlelight and everything, it just feels really special.
Mm-hmm. As I always say here, perfection is boring.
It's stupid.
Okay, so lighting. This to me is very important. I hate overhead lighting. Yes. Like if you flip on overhead lighting in my house, I'm immediately walking to flip it off. So.
And who wants to sit there at a dinner party and try to be convivial with like this harsh lighting on you? It is so worse. It's totally
what I look like when I sit in overhead lighting.
Yeah, same. No one is beautiful. No one's like feeling like great. You're setting a mood. You're setting a vibe. Mm-hmm. You people walk in and you're saying, welcome to this other place.
Welcome to my sexy holiday party.
Welcome.
Welcome. I love the idea of candles. And even if you, like, I have a bunch of the battery-powered candles.
Yeah, they're so cool.
And I have them for our roof deck, but I also will bring them down when the roof deck is, like, we're not going up there because it's raining all the time because it's Seattle, you know, and it's winter. I bring them down and I put them around the house during the holidays because it's, like, I don't know, that vibe of, like, this, like, lovely candlelight.
We have a lot of them, too, for all of our power outages. And
oh, yeah.
Because, yeah, they're so great. And
then you're prepared for a power outage or a sexy party.
Or, I mean, if you have lamps that are really bright, you can, in a safe way, drape like a scarf or something over it or some fabric to kind of soften it if there's something that are really bright. So there you can play around with it. There are things you can do. If there's nothing you can do, you know, don't stress. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. I know I was just hating on overhead light, but, you know, you do what you
can. I won't come to your party, but somebody will. No, I'm just kidding.
But you could just say, I'm going to, you know, in this one room where we're eating, we're going to turn off the lights and just do these like little candles, or you could get those
string.
Gosh, you guys are so creative. Yeah. You can. I don't need to come up with these solutions. Yeah, I know
y'all got it.
You got it.
Y'all got it.
You can make it great. Okay,
so the next thing that you have on your list is very important to me just in general. So I do think that it, you know, music.
Have to. Absolutely. Have to. 100%. A party without music is not a party, people. I don't know what it is, but it's not great.
It's a nap. It's a group nap.
You need
music. I don't know why we're all sleeping, but...
We're in daycare.
Maybe I'm just... Again, I've been working a lot because we're about to do these two. Maybe I'm like, my subconscious is like, Jen, you need to sleep.
Group nap.
Suggest a group nap. Music is definitely part of the vibes. Around the holidays, like, I have different playlists for different moods. Like, I'll have, like, my old school, you know, holiday music. Mm-hmm. Or I have my, like, emo Christmas music. If you have Spotify, you could utilize the collaboration playlist and people can add, like, their favorite holiday song. That would be fun. Sorry, I just hijacked this segment.
No, I love it. There's no hijacking. This is a conversation. And
I love it.
I agree with you. If you have friends or you yourself are a musician, do a concert. Maybe that's part of dinner. That's like for dessert. Everyone gets dessert and a show, you know, and a concert.
Ooh.
And people can join in and sing. I mean, I think there's something so beautiful about exploring what humans can do without technology. It's kind of a rarity these days, and I think it's kind of special. A dinner party can be that, You know, it's just people gathered around a table eating. We're doing something that humans have done forever. Well, maybe not with the table, but I mean, definitely gathering and eating. And music is such an integral part of that. So yeah, just, you know, make it your own and make it fun. But you have to have music.
Yeah,
you do. No one wants to walk into a room that's quiet with overhead lighting and be expected to like be in a party mood. It's not, you're like,
again, that's not going to happen now.
So you're like, am I here for a job interview? What is happening? Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you are the hostess with the absolute mostest, a party favor option.
Yeah, which I think can be really fun if you have time, which is like a big if. And it does not have to be something that you buy. It can, I think it's better actually if it's something that you make. Something that my friend, Chef Allie, who I mentioned, she does a lot where she'll like cook a scone or something that you could eat for breakfast the next day or have as a snack on your drive home. And I really love that because it's so thoughtful. It's just, you can put it by the door, wrap it up with a little string and like a paper bag. You can even get like at Whole Foods, they have just these little paper bags that are like paper sandwich bags. You could just wrap it in that. They're not very expensive. And then it's like done. And it's just a little extra kind of way to care for your guests when they leave your house. You know, just one little extra step. But it could be anything. I mean, I'm a favor always of like a food option because it's like a little snack or something. But I mean, you all are so creative and make so many beautiful things. And it could even be part of your table setting. If you're doing like place cards or something, you could have it hold the, you know, the place card. Just a couple more things here about the vibe. And it's just general logistic kind of stuff.
Yeah.
If you live somewhere where there is inclement weather, having a place for people to hang their coats or take off their boots, or, you know, if you're doing something like that, just sort of allocating a spot for that and thinking of that ahead of time. You can buy little coat racks if you're someone who entertains frequently and you have room to store something like that. You can just use the the bedroom or whatever, you know, you use what you have.
And can I give a suggestion when it comes to this? If you're a shoes off household, which I feel like there's some big controversy around this. Let people know ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because not everybody is a shoes off household. And there might be like, we accidentally wore a sock with a hole, which none of you have holes in your socks because you all mend them. But just like that kind of stuff of, so that people can feel cozy when they come into your place. I mean, one of my friends talks about this a lot, is like, they hate going over to parties when they are asked to take off their shoes if they don't know, even though they like are fine with it. It's just like, oh, I wish I would have known because X, Y, Z. So yeah, just like letting people know if you're a shoes off household is always a good idea.
And if you can, you know, you could always get a bunch of slippers and then people have slippers to,
and then,
you know,
that is
their gift
that you give them.
Slippers.
There it is.
That's
I love that idea.
Or they could bring their own, you know, if you let them know. I love that. Letting people know in advance. That's really, that's really important. It's just part of taking care of the people who are coming.
Do you want to do a recap of the vibes part three?
Yeah, let's do a recap of the vibes. So
I feel like we need to do like the vibes shimmy recap.
I love it. I'm not having a seizure. It's just how I dance. Just to clarify. My hands a little bit. So it's not just like a bobblehead.
Do the Andrea. We just made up a dance.
I know. And it's going to catch on.
Because all these people watching are
going to do
take it to their next party.
Yeah, a signature dance move. It's never a bad idea to show up with one of those.
No.
Just in case.
Teach all the people at your party. This is how dance revolutions get started.
Yeah, we've got your service style.
Mm-hmm.
Buffet, family style. Your table settings, which includes florals, linens, handwritten menus if you do that, place cards, the plates that you're using,
all the
silverware,
fun,
the glassware, like all of that stuff, you know, just making sure that people at the minimum have what they need. Mm-hmm. And then kind of setting a little theme or color story or, you know, just, yeah, getting creative with that, making sure it's comfortable. Oh, there's one thing I didn't mention that is I have to mention. If you are doing floral arrangements on your table, please, pretty please make sure that the height of the flowers is lower than the people so that they can still see, or you're using those really tall, narrow flower vases or holders that go above. It is so aggravating when you're trying to have a conversation with someone across the table and there's a giant bouquet right near, like,
yeah,
that's like the signature dance move for that.
It's interesting. The last few weddings I've been to, there's always some sort of floral something in the way. And I'm just like, who thought of this?
They didn't think about it. But really what you need to set the tone, good, soft, party-inspired lighting, and really great music playlist. Mm-hmm. Collaborate with your friends coming. Assign it as a task to somebody if it's like too much for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have your musician friends play, do a concert. Yeah. Gotta have music.
Fun. Love it.
And a party favor, which is optional.
Optional. Yes. And then logistics.
And then the logistics, making sure you mm-hmm. have a space for people's coats, making sure that everyone has a place to sit while they eat, and thinking about what is this experience going to be like. If, you know, if you're kind of sitting on couches and chairs, is there a way that you could get at least a tray or something so that people can put it on their lap so they're not like, mm-hmm. you know, kind of juggling it, or create a little table or something where they could put their drinks down, sit and think about what is it going to actually feel like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you'll figure out what you need to have, you know, if you just think about it for a little bit. And then the flow, making sure that you are creating different stations or zones. If, you know, if you have the space for that, so people don't all just gather in the one spot, and making sure you're creating a good flow for your buffet line so that people start in one area and then they work their way through and then exit in another one where they're not crisscrossing over each other.
Mm-hmm. I know that everybody is like really excited about this and their notes are just filled with goodness. But also I want you to talk about like what you do outside of coming onto this podcast that helps people with this kind of stuff.
I think I mentioned my primary job is I have a business called Mortar Pestle Cooking. And we cook dinner parties for people who come to the Lake Tahoe area, which is where I live. So we kind of will cook for them if they're here on vacation with their families for the whole week. We cook for a lot of different types of families with different, you know, eating habits and foods that they love. And then we also sometimes are doing really like special occasion dinners, and sometimes it's like just dinner. So there's a lot of variety and range in what we offer and how we cook and the kind of menus that we make. It's a lot of fun. I got into this field because I love really good food. I love to eat it. Cooking it was really fun. But the longer that I've been here in this industry, my relationship with cooking has really evolved a lot. And to me, where I'm at now, I think food is great. You know, I think it's important, obviously. But what's really special to me is the way that food is this catalyst for people connecting to each other. And mm-hmm. I think it's really beautiful. And I struggle a lot because there are so many problems that are insurmountable feeling in the world. And I know everyone is feeling the weights of everything that's happening. And sometimes it feels like so silly to think about a dinner party with everything that's going on. But I remind myself, and it usually happens when I've cooked a dinner and like when I see what happens at that table. And that's like the reminder to me why it actually isn't stupid, why it actually matters a lot. It's because mm-hmm. it allows us to connect to each other and and experience each other at our best, you know, mm-hmm. and share laughter, share like pleasure from eating things that are delicious, from just living even for a few hours in this moment where there's beautiful lighting and there's fun music mm-hmm. and we're connecting and talking to each other. And that's why dinner parties, you know, like this, that's why they matter. That's why they're important. So that's why I keep going because yeah. I have doubts a lot, but then every time I cook for a party like that, or I have one myself, I come away and I feel really full. Like this was
literally
feeling,
and figuratively, yeah, my heart and my tummy.
Exactly.
I love that. And I like, I hear what you're saying. There's a lot of scary and sad things happening right now in the world, and we're not making light of that or, you know, taking away from the weight or the gravity. But I think that, you know, the two things can be true at once, right? We can have these conversations and acknowledge what's happening and do what we can to help everyone, you know, call your congresspeople, all of that. But you can also come together and be with people that you love at the same time. Just because bad things and scary things are happening doesn't mean that we can't have moments with people that we love.
Actually, that is what inspired the Potato Dumpling Society, which I mentioned when I was on here last time with you. Mm-hmm. And it's an online subscription to a monthly dinner party, so that it's just a little bit of a, you know, makes it easier for you. This, I have talked a lot about how to host a dinner party, and actually for the Potato Dumpling Society, I have a very even more comprehensive hosting guide that's mm-hmm. included in that. So you get all of this every month. But it's also just a different menu every month. And really my hope and the goal with it is to inspire people to gather with their friends and just cook together and eat together once a month, or, you know, once every couple of months, whenever you can make it work. But just to mm-hmm. have, to kind of give you the tools to say, here, you go ahead and just, you can just cook this. You don't have to like try to figure everything out, and make it easy on you. Because mm-hmm. I think it's really important to gather yeah. with the people that we love. And I also think that cooking itself is very important. And I've been doing more teaching recently, and I want to, because it's a way to take care of yourself, and it's a way mm-hmm. to survive. I mean, mm-hmm. to be self-reliant, to know how to cook, to know how to take food in its raw form and turn it into something that you can eat. That's something that is nourishing and satisfying and delicious. The feeling of pride that you get from doing something like that, it you know, it ripples out into other parts of your life. And it's very important to know how to cook. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people want to cook and love to cook, and do cook or don't, because they're afraid. And so I just want to help give people that little push and say, you can do this, mm-hmm. and just take that first step, and you got this.
Right? Yeah. And I will say that being a part of the Potato Dumpling Society for the last few months, everything has been like very clearly laid out. Everything that you have ever made that I have eaten, or any recipe that I have made that you have provided, has always been absolutely delicious. There's always a vegetarian option. And I just highly recommend it if you're like, even if you love to cook already, but you're like, I just want to like try something new, that it's a really great way to jumpstart that love of cooking and food and coming together with others. And if it's like the best time saver ever, because you don't have to figure out a menu. It's right there.
Thank you.
Highly recommend. And how do they find all of these things if they want you to come cook for them in the Tahoe area, or if they want to join the Potato Dumpling Society?
Yes.
Where do they go?
You can find every links to everything on my website, mortarpestlecooking.com.
We will link it below in the show notes.
And then the Potato Dumpling Society is part of my Substack, which is called Cookie Jar. which houses my different food writing. I talk about wine, cooking, just random musings, I guess. And then I have the Potato Dumpling Society on there, which is a subscription. It's $8 a month. You get access to all of the past menus, recipes, and then every month you get that month's menu and recipes.
Yeah.
All the food, it's seasonal, so it moves through the seasons. The recipes aren't necessarily like a standard format where I say, like, you take one cup of this and add one teaspoon of this. Mm-hmm. I explain to you what to listen for, what to taste for, what the food should look like, because I think that is where you really learn how to cook. That's where you learn techniques. So you're not just following something, you're actually learning. And I explain how that's applicable to other similar types of ingredients. Which I think is exciting. That's how I cook. That's how I share cooking with other people when I'm explaining. So I just decided to write the recipes in that same way.
Visit those links down in the show notes. And Andrea is on the Making app. You can always send a message or go follow if you have other questions. If you have questions too, you can always send them to hq@makingco.com and we'll pass them along to Andrea as well.
I'm on the Making Up. I'm at Andrea, A-N-D-R-E-Y-A.
Yeah.
And I'm on Instagram as well as at Mortar Pestle Cooking.
Did ask for some people to send in questions. All of your holiday questions to an actual chef. First question that you got was how to sharpen a knife.
Yes. And this is a really good question and one that I probably would be better as a demonstration than an actual response. I'll just find one online that I can link.
But also you've said something before where there are people who will do that for you.
If you want to get your knife sharpened professionally, a lot of times knife sharpeners will go to a farmer's market and they have a portable thing. You could just Google it for your local town to see who does that. If there's a place that sells knives, I think even places like Williams and Sonoma and like Sur La Table, I think they might offer a knife sharpening service. You might have to just kind of search around a little bit, but you'll find something. If you want to get it done professionally, I think that's probably the best way to do it, especially if you've never done it before. You can really mess up your knives if you try to do it yourself and you don't really know what you're doing.
What is your favorite holiday dessert cocktail potato recipe?
These were all questions that came through my Instagram. And potato recipe is an easy mashed potatoes, hands down. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different kinds of ways to do the mashed potatoes. My ultimate, it's like the ultimate luxury is when, and I'm like, I literally just started salivating, like just thinking about this. But you take heavy cream and butter. I have made this with oat milk, and it's really delicious too. So if you don't eat dairy, this is it doesn't matter. You can still do it with, I've used cashew cream and a little bit of oat milk, and it comes out so creamy and luxurious. So as a vegan version of it, it's so good.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically I take Yukon Gold potatoes. Sometimes I'll use russet, but I prefer the Yukon Gold. Boil them until they're falling apart. Strain them, put them back in the pot, and then I'll have heated. Sometimes I don't heat it. You're supposed to heat it, but sometimes I'm like, I don't have time. I just do it. But if you do have time, this will make it even better. So you take your hot cream, you take cream, butter, and then I like to throw in like sage, fresh sage, and a couple of garlic cloves into a pot, bring it up just to a simmer, and then you're going to strain and let that kind of sit with all the herbs and everything. So you're infusing the cream with the herbs and the garlic. Then you strain that. So I would start the cream at the same time that you start your potatoes, so that way the cream has time to infuse. Strain your potatoes and then strain the cream mixture a little bit at a time back into those potatoes, and then you mix it. You could put it through a food mill. I'd be like the most kind of traditional way, because then after you strain it, you put the potatoes through a food mill and then they're like really fine. And then you add the cream to that. And they're like, it's so luxurious. Plus salt, to taste. Just taste it as you go.
Yum, yum.
I don't drink a lot of cocktails or mocktails. It's something I'd like to get more into. Mm-hmm. I have had like shrubs mixed with like fizzy water, and it kind of tastes like a spritzer. And I think those are really fun. Otherwise, like for cocktails, I kind of usually go for bourbon based something.
I love making, and I might be saying this wrong, but Glühwein. And it makes your house smell really good too.
Oh, yeah.
A very long time ago, I went to Berlin, and it was right after the New Year. So everybody was still celebrating holiday, and they have stands, and you can just walk up and like buy a cup of Glühwein. And it's like, again, I'm sorry if I'm saying it wrong, but it's just like this warm, lovely, like beverage. And if you do it in your house, it makes it smell really nice. So if you do wine or whatever, then that's, I don't know, that's one of my favorites if we're talking about cocktails. Yeah.
Oh, that's delicious. Holiday dessert. I'm a chocolate girl. Give me like decadent, dark, flourless chocolate whipped cream. I like it pretty simple. I probably make some version of that every year.
Somebody asked, how do you make handwritten menus?
That was Stacia's question.
Oh my gosh, Stacia.
We can't not mention her.
We can't. That just, she has to be mentioned. If we're talking, we have to talk about Stacia. Stacia's one of my best friends, which led for me and Andrea to become best friends.
Yes.
So that was fun.
Yes.
And we love Stacia. And I love that she asked this question. What is, so like, when you sit down to make your handwritten menus, I mean, again, we're talking to a bunch of creative people,
yeah,
but like, what is your thought process when putting it together?
Oh, I have so much fun doing these menus. They're just like so dreamy to me. They're inspired by the menu and the person. I just did one for this, one of my favorite clients. She had her birthday party a few weeks ago, and I got to cook for it. And so she was my inspiration, obviously. Her cousin, who's amazing, did this like beautiful place setting, and they were using all these like oranges and beautiful autumn colors. So that I said, okay, so those are the colors that I want to use. And then, you know, I just kind of wrote it out from there. But sometimes it's the ingredients in the menu. Sometimes in the summer where there's all this beautiful produce, then I'll do like little tomatoes or eggplants or whatever, you know, like things around, and then write something. But I always like to put the date in case anyone wants to save it. So it's like a keepsake. And then I always like to put something like happy holidays or happy birthday or we're so rad or, you know, I don't know, whatever. Just like a fun little something at the top. So I'll do like the picture, the kind of header, then I'll do the fun little whatever. And then the date, which often will say Lake Tahoe or wherever the dinner is. And then I'll just list it, you know, like salad or, well, I always start with a salad. So there's always something out there, but then I'll just write whatever we're going to be eating. And then at the bottom, I like to have, it's almost like a cheers or something, but something I've recently been adding is to say eat with joy, because it's a little bit of a reminder for me as well.
Mine would be, you better like it. No.
You can do watercolor, and then, you know, everyone could get their own, or you could scan it. And I use Canva a lot for like kind of scanning images and then creating like something that I can print out if I'm doing a lot of different menus. You could use markers or like watercolor pens. I mean, you guys know what you use, but there are a lot of different things. I think it'd be so fun to see like an embroidered menu or like a fabric menu with, you know, I mean, I'm sure that would take way longer, like a collage menu. I don't know. They just like, there could be some really fun ways to do it.
Now we have the question of how to create perfect hosting spot in your home without a stress fest.
Yeah.
So I think you touched on this a little bit, but.
Yeah, I think probably anyone who's ever hosted a party can relate to this. You're like, oh, I've got to clean like every nook and cranny. I've got to make sure that everything is perfect. I mean, to a certain degree, I think that's just the human nature that you can't really get away from too much. We're kind of like wired that way. We want to create this like amazing space. But if it's to the point where you feel like it's keeping you from inviting people over or hosting, more than anything, I just want to say, like, just remember that these people love you and they want to spend time with you. And if there's not, you know, if the space isn't just so, you know, fuck it. Like, just have a, you know, like, it's not about that. You are, you have so much more to offer to your friends, you know, in who you are than the space that you're providing. It's a tough question. It's one that, like, when I got it, I was like, my heart ached, you know, cause I know this person who sent it and she's like so amazing and wonderful. And I, you know, and I also absolutely know what she's going through because I absolutely have been there and am there all the time. And I think so many of us are, but I just wanted to remind her and all of us that we show up for people, not for places. So, you know.
Yeah. It's about the people around you.
Yeah.
Okay. So, oh my goodness.
Okay.
Tips for slowing down as you cook all of the things.
Yeah. And I hope that we were able to address this kind of, you know, throughout this whole conversation. But yeah, really taking time to prep and asking for help and absolutely inviting help, actually getting more people, more hands in the kitchen. If you're cooking a lot of stuff, make it, you know, make that part of your party where you're cooking together and have those memories. So I think it can be a really special and meaningful piece if you let it, you know, just let go a little bit and slow down and just say, you know what? Maybe we don't need to make 15 different dishes. Maybe we only make 9 and maybe all of us do it together.
I will say, I am the first person to say I can do all of this by myself. It's fine. It's fine. I don't need help. That has been something that I am unlearning. There was a year that I invited a small group over. I was like, I can do it all. And everyone was arriving. And like my friend Val was like, let me help you. And I just let it happen because I was realizing I needed help because I was going to be way behind time. Mm-hmm. Now, were we way behind time still? Yes, we were. But all I remember is having so much fun with Val cooking in the kitchen. And I'm sure everyone else was like starving, like had already gone through all the cheese. And we're just like laughing and drinking wine and like, you know, just like putting things in the oven and taking them out and like having such a good time. And that's what I remember. I don't even remember what the other people were doing. And again, hosting a party, that's probably not the best thing. But the point of it is like asking people to help and like everybody having that fun time together. That's what you're going to remember.
Yeah.
Okay. So from the Making app, MJ at Cybergoth MJ, which that's a great username, asks, how do you make a less boring meat-free meal that even meat eaters won't scoff at?
I love this question because we do eat meat, but we don't eat a lot of meat in our household. And I really love vegetables. I think they're much more interesting to work with and cook than meat. So I always have a lot of fun cooking vegetarian and vegan. First of all, I approach things from a seasonal position. I'm like, okay, what is the weather like? What do we feel like? Is it like cold and gross? So we want something like warm and cozy, or are we in, you know, I don't know, Hawaii or something, and it's like a little bit warmer and we don't want some big old heavy laden down thing. You know, that is the first kind of piece that helps me determine what we're going to make. And then I just look at like, what is the produce that's available right now? That's what I'm trying to say is good food is good food. People know when something is delicious. It doesn't matter if they're meat eaters or vegan or whatever, that, you know, they can recognize that. So if your food is really good, then I don't think your meat eaters are going to be missing that. If they're people who really crave like protein and they have to have protein, there are ways to get complete proteins through like grains and legumes. Like, you know, you could do like lentils and rice as a mix. You could do that as a stuffing in your pumpkin. You could make all of your sides vegan if you have some vegans who are there, and maybe just have one meat item for your meat eater people, but then everyone else, but then you all can kind of eat everything else.
The other side of that too is there are so many really good vegetarian, like fake meat options now. If people are craving a certain thing, like try and find a vegetarian option.
Just refer to the anatomy of a meal, because if you are hitting all of these flavor elements and textural elements, that is going to create a very satisfying eating experience. Mm-hmm. So all of those things can be vegetables and grains. And I mean, God, there's such an endless array of delicious foods that you can like cook in these fashions. And I think people will be absolutely satisfied.
I have another question that came through our email. There's actually a couple here. So, one is, what are your go-to recipes? Which I feel like that's like a really big question. I would say for that, go check out Andrea's Substack, because I think that there's a lot of really good information there. Read through some of the articles, and then also just joining the Potato Dumpling Society. I mean, you're going to get so many of the amazing things that Andrea makes. Somebody asked, how do you enhance a simple chicken dish so it sparkles?
Oh, with food glitter, obviously. No, I'm kidding. there is food grade glitter though, which is so like weird to me. I mean, that gives you a literal sparkle, so that is kind of one option. But I love roast chicken. It's one of the most like soul satisfying meals for me. Chicken is very, very versatile because it's so neutral. You can do so much with it. You can marinate it. I like to grill it or just roast it. There's this herb sauce that I do, and I kind of serve it with every meat pretty much, but it's a really great way to kind of jazz it up after the fact. You might just like saute it with salt and pepper, roast it with salt and pepper and olive oil or something. And then you put the sauce over it like after, right before you serve it. And it's really bright and green. And what it is you just take whatever herbs you have on hand, or if you're going out to buy herbs, I like something like dill, mint, parsley, scallions, and then freshly grated garlic and the zest of one lemon. And then I blend that all together in a little food processor with an extra virgin olive oil and a couple pinches of salt. You can throw chili peppers in there if you want. And then it's kind of like a pesto. That's like the texture you're looking for. And then you just spoon it over the chicken afterwards. You can mix after you've rested the chicken. If there are pan drippings, mix that into it. It's so good. And in terms of ratios, you might use like, you know, like one handful of parsley, like two green onions, one clove of garlic, the one lemon zest, and then just like a little, you know, maybe like two sprigs of mint and like one sprig of dill. Because the dill and the mint are really strong, so you don't want them to...
You don't want too much.
Right.
I feel like that would be really good with like baked tofu too.
It'd be so
just
good
like
with
putting
that.
That on top. Yum.
Yeah.
Yum, yum.
So many good. Yeah. I love like things like that, little sauces that you can make. You could keep that in a jar in your fridge. It'll last for a while. Just pull it out right before you use it. But yeah, generally anytime you can get like a nice, you know, it's called the Maillard reaction. It's this like browning that you get on proteins, which is referred to as caramelization a lot, but caramelization is a similar thing, but it happens to sugars and this happens to protein.
So the other one, it kind of leads into this too, that somebody said that their doctor advised them to eat chicken and fish, but they get bored alternating them. If you were told this, how might you handle it?
I probably wouldn't eat them every day. I would probably do like chicken maybe a couple times a week and maybe fish a couple times a week. I would probably play around with different marinades, and if you have like sodium dietary issues or something, you would want to be careful about pre-made marinades. But it's really easy to make your own marinade. There are different cooking methods, you know, grilling, roasting, sauteing, then grill. Like you could do a whole chicken marinated in yogurt, for example, let it sit overnight. And then just grill the whole, you know, do like a spatchcock chicken where you remove the spine so it lays down flat and then like grill the whole thing or just like, you know, pieces of it.
This has been so much fun. I've really enjoyed all of this. It's so much good information. I do want to just touch really quick, you know, we're talking about holiday parties. Research the land that you're on. Research the people who were here before we were. And just be very aware of the history, because a lot of what we were taught growing up was not correct. When we're trying to change things and change the world and be more responsible in that space, understanding the history and kind of how things happened, that's always important. And I'm not going to read any of this because it is somebody else's words. But I will link it in the show notes. I found an article on time.com and it is by Sean Sherman and it is called "The Thanksgiving Tale We Tell is a Harmful Lie. As a Native American, I found a better way to celebrate the holiday." I'll link it in the show notes.
I would love to link some Native American chefs, if that's okay, in case anybody wanted to check out and learn more about Native foods.
I love that, as we do on every episode, and especially because we're talking about the holidays. And I think that it's always good to reflect on what we're grateful for. Andrea, what are you grateful for this episode?
I just feel really grateful to be able to share this information and hope that it helps people. I really hope that it helps you all enjoy each other, enjoy your, you know, time with your friends and your family more. I hope it eliminates some stress in your life. And I really hope it inspires you to gather with the people who you love and just enjoy each other's company and, you know, really create some like long lasting connections and memories that fill up your cups.
I am actually going back to the asking for help thing. I am grateful for my friend Val, who reminds me all the time that it's okay to ask for help, because I am that person again that's like, I can do it all myself. And she is headed to Barcelona with me to help with Barcelona Knits and all of our setup there. And so she keeps reminding me, like, let me know what I can do to help. And I just, again, just having people in your life, I'm grateful for all of you that have ever said, what can I do to help? And I think that that's something that we can all be doing consistently in everybody's lives and checking in with people. And even if it's just, you know, sending a hi, hello, how are you? What can I do? That's, you know, I think it makes people feel special and, again, reminds people that, like, we're all here for each other. So everybody, make sure that when you do your holiday meals, your cooking, your prep, your plating, your table, your lighting, anything, like, post all that stuff in the Making app. We want to see it all. You know, we're here to inspire everybody. So the Making app is multi-craftual and super creative, and this totally fits within it. So definitely share. Have a lovely holiday season. Thank you, Andrea, so much for sharing all of this amazing information. Everybody go check out the Potato Dumpling Society and join, because it is so worth it. And we'll see y'all in the Making app.
Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.